With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, David. As I'm talking, the sun is shining through your windows onto my bald pate.
Yes, that's right. Is it an enjoyable experience?
It's quite nice, because it's sort of the first sun of spring, isn't it?
It is a bit. It's been going back and forth. It's still bloody cold.
Is it? I mean, is it nice to look at? Does it look cinematic?
It does, actually.
Okay.
You know that classic shot from the sort of 1950s actress where there'd be a bar of light across her eyes?
Yes.
It's doing that, but only with your mouth.
On my mouth? So
yeah.
More erotic.
A bit slightly more erotic than old actresses, yeah.
I'm now, for the audience listening, I'm now pursing my lips. You might be able to tell by my intonation. I am.
It's quite hard to purse and talk, isn't it?
I'm pursing my lips erotically.
Erotically.
It doesn't sound erotic, it sounds like all the opposite.
In fact, ironically, if you say the word erotically whilst you do it.
Erotically.
It's very unerotic.
You sound like a Tory MP.
Erotically. Yeah, that's how you get into a Tory impression. Erotically.
So I expect when they do that, they have to dub the voice over afterwards.
Yeah, they probably do. I must say, it's not erotic.
But it's not erotic at all. And I expect you're trying it. I don't know why I'm talking about that nasally at the same time.
No, but you can't help but do that.
We went to cinemas.
We went to our respective cinemas to see some more films, which we're going to talk about. Shall I go first with Mara?
Yes, I've been talking first a lot lately, and I worry that people will be switching off.
So what? Do you want more of my voice?
Yes,
in here?
Please.
Okay. Well, I went to see a film. It's a bit of a... There wasn't much choice to go see things. They're still sort of putting out the Oscar nominees and winners to try and make a bit more cash with those, and very few people are trying to compete with that in the moment. But I went to see a film called The Witch because it's been getting good reviews. I knew very little about it, but it's just one of those that people go, yeah, it's good. It's the director's debut.
I've seen the trailer for it. Sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all. What did you make of the trailer?
Well, I've got an interesting point about making trailers. It's really hard to make a comedy trailer because you ruin the jokes in it. But a horror trailer...
Oh,
you can make things look a lot more scary than they actually are. A lot of the horror trailers are scarier than the actual films.
Yes.
Why is that?
I guess because not knowing what's happening is scary.
And just lots of sinister things with a bit of music and it tells you the story really quickly. Because I thought that from the trailer, it looked like it could be really scary, but it might be rubbish.
Well, this film is about a family in New England, which is in America, in like 1630, the 17th century, and they get banished from a Puritan village for having a different view of Christ. They're a very religious family, but the father of the family is like, he believes something slightly different to the rest of the village.
What year did people first start settling in America?
Oh God, you're testing me there. I don't know. Like,
I always assumed
probably 1500s.
Really? 1630, they can't have been there long then.
Well, James I was king in 1605, so all the Tudors had already gone, and the Tudors were the big colonial expanders, weren't they?
It's a real gap in my knowledge there.
Welcome to People Guess History. Yeah, it's around colonial times, okay. Right? But it's a bit later. So, you know, New England is established, I guess. But, so it's this husband and wife and their five kids. So they've got some twins, they've got an older son, an older daughter, and a baby.
Is it like the comedy, 2.4 children,
it's
but 2.5?
It's a bit like that, if they end up going into a harsh wilderness and are desperately trying to survive alone against the odds whilst all of their children die.
Oh.
So it's the same.
Very similar.
Yeah. So basically, they try and make it out on their own and build this farm, but the crops fail and everything. And then whilst Thomason, who is the young girl, is looking after the baby, she's playing peekaboo with it, and it's literally for seconds she closes her eyes and then opens them again and the baby is gone. And that is the sort of the incident that sends this family off into sort of cascade of despair, really. But it's about it's an interesting mix, because there is something in the forest, and the film is called The Witch. Mm-hmm. So you can guess what it is. Yeah. And it is very accurately written about fears of witches in the 17th century, you know, what people believed they were capable of and what they would do and what they were motivated by and all of this. But it's also equal part psychological thriller about this family's fear and paranoia and guilt and shame and all of this just feeding on itself and destroying itself, basically, out there in the wilderness, when the true baddie is really the environment itself. They just can't survive out there. So it's very bleak and incredibly well done. The two adult actors who you may well know, who play the father and mother, are Ralph Ineson, who has got an incredible northern accent. You may know him as Finchy from The Office, but he's the dad in this, and he's brilliant. And his wife is played by Kate Dickey, who's in Game of Thrones.
Do they speak an English accent?
Yes, they do. Northern English accents.
Okay.
So, Kate Dickey, do you watch Game of Thrones? That's the one, yes. She is the queen of the Eyrie. We're up in the mountain with the moon door.
Oh, yes, I know the one.
You know her?
She's got a very striking face.
Very striking, creepy look. She's been used for horror things now, actually, since Game of Thrones. But, so they're excellent. And then the lead is actually the young girl, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, who is... she was born in England, but she lives in Florida, I think.
Oh,
but
she's enjoying herself,
yeah,
hasn't
she? She's probably having a good time. But her northern accent's excellent as well, so I assume she's born from...
Witching woods.
I didn't do it.
They got the witch's stolen baby taken into the bloody woods.
So
like that.
It's exactly like that. And this is, just to give you all the other facts, I'm just quoting IMDb here, but it's by Robert Eggers. He wrote and directed it, and this is his debut.
I'm thinking of David Eggers as a writer, isn't he?
Possibly.
Eggers. I don't think I like that surname. It sounds like a sort of nickname, Eggers, doesn't it?
Eggers. Like a cricketer. Sounds like a cricketer.
Eggers. The guy who smells.
He's a bloody good egg, so we call him Eggers.
I imagine
he smells of eggs.
He smells of cooked breakfast.
He probably does.
Yeah. Oh, Eggers.
Oh.
Have a shower, Eggers.
So, basically, that's the story, and then it's what happens to this family. You know, it's a really engaging, good piece. It's really well done. I think it's... For me, it slightly falls between two stools in that the psychological drama is most of it. It's more psychological drama about a family not trusting one another than it is a horror film about a supernatural entity
preying on them. Where are you taking baby, then?
Yeah, exactly. And that is actually the bits that work best. So... when it turns out there is a real witch and this stuff's happening, that feels almost like a cop-out, because it would be a more powerful story if the family had just turned on each other because of their harsh situation, you know, and their own paranoia and fear.
The Babadook's about paranoia, isn't
exactly, it is. And there aren't quite enough iconic shots and scenes for you to, you know... for it truly to get under your skin. I would say two, maybe three at a push. But the rest of it is really well done and accurate, and the language of the time and the fears of the time and just their attitudes, and it's all, you buy into it 100%. But I did leave the cinema going, what was the point of all that? Because it felt like a museum piece in that it was accurately about fears people had 400 years ago. But I'm watching it now. I'm not afraid of these things.
No,
I don't need a cautionary tale about believing in witches.
What are you scared of?
What am I scared of? I'm scared of getting into fights with unreasonable people that I can't then talk down. And then I'm scared of perhaps hurting them by defending myself and then the judicial process not siding with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that's probably my principal
I told
fear.
You I almost got stabbed, didn't I? Last year, before last, I saw some bloke dropping litter.
Yeah.
I thought, just chucking, not just, he was walking along, just taking stuff off a wrapper paper, just chucking loads of litter on the street, just throwing it.
Yeah.
And I said, pick it up. And he said, what'd you say? And he came over. And he started saying, well, he put his hand in his pocket like he had a knot, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He put his hand, so I thought, I don't know if you've got if you have got a knife, or, you know, I had to walk off in the end. Horrible.
That is horrible. I mean, if I was to own a knife of that variety, I don't think I'd keep it in like a loose pocket.
He just did the thing.
It would easily fall out if, you know.
You're saying I should have got into a fight with him?
Oh, I think you should have risked it, Mary, and just run and bear hugged him.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying is that I think it's a really interesting piece. It's not quite a horror. It is a good psychological thriller, but it could have been more satisfying. It's, as a debut, it's, you know, stunning, really.
Is it a low budget film?
Yeah, yeah, hugely so. It's one family in one location for the entire film. Outdoors, so it will have cost a bit to do. You know, it's outdoors and in, you know, their threadbare sort of accommodation, you know, just a cabin, basically.
That's what you do. You make films set about really poor people.
Yeah.
And you don't have to barely clothe them, and just everything's made out of sticks.
Yeah, but because it's all filmed outside in the freezing cold, I mean, they would have had to, you know.
Well, I'm going to make a film about the refugees.
Okay.
And you just make your own sort of tent.
Yeah.
And do that.
All right. Well, yeah. Well, you do that.
Low budget.
Yeah. So how are you going to make that interesting?
Put a witch in it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense now. Yeah, it makes sense.
Do you want a ticket for it?
Yeah. What's it called?
It is called Witch by the Sea.
It sounds like you could actually start a franchise then. So, Witch by the Sea.
Yeah.
Witch in the House.
Yeah.
Witch on Holiday in Spain.
Yeah. I think I have a title to my refugee witch thing. We thought it couldn't get any worse.
Oh no!
It's a bit like a Carry On thing,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, it was a witch.
Oh, we thought it couldn't get any worse. Yeah. Do you feel guilty? You feel guilty laughing?
I do a bit.
Why do you feel guilty?
Well, I think it's more I feel guilty we've created something so poor.
Poor when
put poor in terms of artistic merit.
I think it's quite good. I think it's up there with the film. Reading listeners will know I referenced The Bumming Man.
Well, The Bumming Man's been in development hell for so long now, I'm starting to doubt it'll ever get made.
Well, I should start up a Kickstarter page for The Bumming Man.
You really should. What would you do if you managed to get £5 million to make The Bumming Man?
Well, I'd make it, yeah.
Sure, but...
I'd make a low-budget one and keep £4 million.
That's very smart.
I'm sure that's what all the Hollywood people do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure.
I think I'd be lucky to get £20.
Well, you never know. You never know.
If you want to send in money...
No. You can do that on your own time. You don't use our listeners for that.
Don't misuse them.
If you'd like to talk to Marek in private about The Bumming Man and financing it...
I've got another idea.
Then follow him at Marek Larwood on Twitter.
If you'd like to send us a poster...
Yeah.
How about that for The Bumming Man?
Oh, yeah, all right.
Or Witch by the Seaside.
Which... couldn't get any worse.
Or it couldn't get any worse.
Fine, then email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. Or you can share them with one another, facebook.com/filmfandango. Well, that's The Witch. I enjoyed it. I would give it an 8, I think.
8? Very
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, yeah. It was the main girl as well, Anya Taylor-Love, is excellent.
Joy.
What did I say?
Love.
Yeah, they're similar, aren't they?
Lovejoy.
Lovejoy. Anya Lovejoy.
I wish they'd make that into a film.
She was really good. They were all really good, actually. All of them. It relies slightly heavily on child actors as well, but it gets away with it. Because, you know, the majority of the family are children.
As long as they all die...
Yeah, I'm not telling you.
Guess what?
What?
It's time for...
This!
Some people like writing letters, letters.
So this is from Tim Mason. Does he say what voice he wants it in? No.
Yes.
What?
A TV doctor explaining the seriousness of a mundane condition.
Right, well, you and I could play TV doctors, so it could just be...
Yeah, I wish.
Dear Marek, Buddy, David and special guest, please read this in the voice of a TV doctor explaining the seriousness of a mundane condition. Firstly, thank you for watching the films, so I don't have to. Being a father of two little people and commuting many miles, I rarely get the chance to watch any films, even at home, let alone the cinema. But I get the chance to listen to you both ramble entertainingly on about old/new films. Star Wars is definitely better if it's the only film you have been to in over a year. I can see that. All that said, I was sat with my wife watching Spectre with the baby asleep in the same room. The volume was turned down so as not to wake him, which meant I was getting more and more confused about what was going on. I know, although not complex as its Bond, but sleep deprivation is a funny thing. We turned on the subtitles, and we started to pick up a bit more of the story. As the subtitles titled each character's words, it let slip a big plot spoiler about 30 minutes before it was finally revealed. Has this ever happened to you, or has technology trying to help ever caused you grief? Keep watching the films. Dr. Tim from Exeter.
A doctor?
A doctor listens to this show, no less. A severely sleep-deprived doctor who doesn't watch films, but a doctor nonetheless.
I mean, he did make a typo before, so he could have been trying to write Mr. and put Doctor.
Yes, yes.
I don't believe a real doctor would listen to this show.
Okay.
I stopped that. I said, I don't believe a real doctor would listen to this
show.
Yeah.
I can guess what the subtitles were spoilering there on Spectre. Can we spoil a Spectre? Does it matter?
I haven't seen it. Don't spoil
right,
it.
Fine. It's not even interesting. But yes, technology spoiling things. I remember once in sort of a holiday home somewhere with my family, they had a video library. You know, like one of these just things people have, old VHS. This was back in the day. Things people have left behind, almost, it feels like. There's no sort of rhyme or reason to the collection they've got there. And there was a copy of Pretty Woman, who's like, oh, I haven't seen that, put that in. And it was the described for the blind version of Pretty Woman.
Oh, wow.
Really confusing when you're young. Just what's going on? Just like, she gets out of a car and walks towards a building. The man smiles at her. It's all of this all the way through.
I did a play recently, and they had a someone came in for the and did a they had these boards up, and they had even though it was a sort of kids play, they had a subtitled version, so they said what's happening, and what the animals and what we had very few lines what we were saying, but I used to basically mess around and say the lines. I say something different each day.
Yeah.
Because it was pre-programmed and what I did when I was being normal. The thing was different. And so I said something and so the line came up and I stopped and I looked at it because I messed around and read it out loud what she'd written. And then someone else in the cast, I've been reading it from the subtitles board like a joke, said, yeah, it really looked like you were taking the piss out of dead people.
Oh, no. Did the kids like it, though?
I don't know. I think I've talked about this before. I mean, regular listeners will know, it's not that much. We've done enough episodes of this, we will be repeating the same things.
But I imagine generally the kind of person who listens to this hasn't got much of a long-term memory. Yeah. I mean, they're not doctors, are they?
Well, apart from Tim, they're not doctors. It was Tim and not Tom, wasn't it?
Yes.
I said this before when I was watching The Killing and The Bridge.
Yeah.
And I was so used to watching Nordic Noirs and reading subtitles, I went to watch a film and they'd left the subtitles on from the previous screenings.
Right,
this is
Odeon,
Muswell Hill, now The Everyman, Muswell Hill, one of the worst run cinemas in the world. And I didn't notice because I was so used to that I was reading the subtitles and it was in English. Until about 20 minutes in, I thought, oh, this is English.
I don't need to read it. I can watch their faces.
Yeah. But in Happy Valley recently, where I talk about TV for a while, which is the greatest British TV programme in modern times, I didn't know to what TV, there's been complaints. My nan stopped watching it. My girlfriend found it hard to watch because they mumble so much.
Yeah, I saw an article about that this morning.
So she actually had the subtitles on so she could follow it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is, where this mumbling thing's come from, and I wonder if it's...
Thomas Hardy. You get awards for it.
It's not just from him. I think it might be that TV to film is now a far more fluid ladder. You know, it's no longer frowned upon to be a TV actor. Therefore, people in television are auditioning for films. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when your face is as big as a building, you have to keep everything so small, and therefore you simply don't have the articulation to be doing, you know. Whereas in TV, more traditionally, you had more of a medium shot and people could be a bit more bigger, and often they've come from theatre, so they can speak properly. The theatre tradition is dying out, I think. So people are actually speaking more like people actually do.
There's a lady in Happy Valley who basically goes close to the microphone. Just speaking in a whisper like that. You could barely hear what she was saying.
Barely moving her mouth.
She was so gentle.
Thinking about her eyes so much.
Doesn't want
to blink.
Don't do anything.
You go like that when you're trying not to blink because you know the camera's really in your face. So if you're really focusing on not blinking, then you just sort of close everything down and
don't do anything. Don't do anything.
Don't do anything at all. Don't do anything.
Let the audience make it up for you.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put subtitles on. That'll do it.
Some people
like writing letters.
And one of those people is Benjamin Fletcher.
What does he say?
Proverbially read in a French accent.
Go on then.
I just need to get my guessing phrase. Bonjour, oui. Oui, c'est vrai. Do you feel Fandango? That's terrible. I was recently listening to your back catalogue and stumbled across your horror review episode. That's terrible. I'm not going to do it anymore. In this, Danielle Ward mentions The Martyrs, a French horror film that was of particular interest to me, as my wife is a big horror fan. Buddy's really got excited by this as well. And I was coerced into watching this a few years back. I can honestly say that I have never seen something so horrendous as this film.
Sorry, Buddy's really getting involved.
Yeah. What started off as a seemingly run-of-the-mill, if very gory, revenge film, soon turns into something I can't unwatch. It would be great if you could discuss this film, as it's been a cause of fascination to me since I've seen it. I do wonder if it is as horrifying and distressing as I've initially thought of, but I've never been brave enough to rewatch it, and I'd be very interested in your opinions on it. Anyway, thanks for the podcast, and keep watching the films. I've heard of The Martyrs before, I think Danielle talked about it.
It sounds horrific. I quite enjoy that email. I'm just like, I've been unable to unwatch it, and it's really scarred my mind. I'd be interested in hearing what you guys think.
I
don't want to watch it.
Yeah, I read your email, and I thought, I should watch it, really. I thought, I just think this is the really wrong time for me.
Right, really tip you over the edge.
To watch this film. I heard about it being horrific. It is... But yes, so it's basically about a young girl. I'm reading this off of Wikipedia. has escaped from an abattoir where she was imprisoned and physically abused for a long period of time. And then she is placed in an orphanage with another girl, and then some other horrific stuff happens. Well, I mean, I don't really know how to answer that email because we don't...
No, I mean, we don't really... I mean, yeah, not to reject your suggestion entirely, Ben, but we don't really want to put ourselves through that.
It's a bit like someone saying to a child, do you want to come around and see my puppies?
Is it? A bit like that. Yeah, I don't know. I have no real interest in seeing something that harrowing, but... yeah, maybe one day. Maybe one day.
Oh, well, shall we get on to the...
Yeah, what did you see this week? And why, Marek? Why?
I went to see it because of the... I really enjoy it. My new favourite cinema is the Crouch End Picture House, which I'm a regular visitor to now. And they show a lot of documentaries on Tuesdays and stuff like that. So I went to see Hitchcock Truffaut, which has got a cinema release.
Hitchcock slash Truffaut.
I don't know if it's Hitchcock slash or Hitchcock. What's it called with the two dots?
Colon.
Yeah.
It's not going to be that because that would be Hitchcock subtitle Truffaut. He's not both men. It's Hitchcock. I keep saying it now.
You've got
Hitchcock
it off me.
Slash Truffaut, as in actor slash model.
I'm looking it up to see what it is. Yes, it is. Yeah. Hitchcock slash Truffaut.
It's harder to say than you think, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, this is a documentary about Hitchcock meeting Truffaut, right? Truffaut interviewing Hitchcock, in fact, isn't it?
Famously, there was a book, there's a series of interviews that took place. François Truffaut, famous sort of French New Wave director. He did things like Jules' Gym. I've not seen any of his stuff.
We've heard a bit.
Really sort of cool director, one of the it names of the sort of 1960s.
Yeah, yeah.
Was a huge fan of Hitchcock. And what's interesting is that around that time, Hitchcock didn't have the respect he has now.
He was thought of as sort of B-movie pop director,
yeah,
wasn't he?
And Truffaut was a huge fan and wanted to do and wrote to him personally, and Hitchcock wrote back and they agreed to meet up with a translator. So there are these tapes and there's some brilliant photos in the film, these lovely black and white photos of three people sitting round a table, cigars, and the translators smoking, and you hear these tapes of them talking, and Hitchcock's got this wonderful voice. You know, just this sort of almost like Churchill type, a voice only an overweight man who smokes can have, but it's wonderful to hear. It's like this very chocolatey tones, and you hear him talk, and he sounds very charismatic. Is this really about anyway? So I'm sort of going off. Truffaut wrote a book about this and explaining Hitchcock's art form and doing shot-by-shot scenes of his famous moments in film, like From the Birds, Rear Window, Vertigo, where he actually showed, you know, the actual the cutting sort of board almost on pages, or how he did it. And lots of young directors who had since become huge directors, like Martin Scorsese, David Fincher, who's the bloke who does the Royal Tenenbaums, and
Wes Anderson,
all, you know, got into films because of this book. It's what their dads had in the cool dads had in their film libraries. Ever, I would say this is not. Don't go and see this at cinema. It's a TV documentary.
Why has it got a cinema release, do you think?
Because it's Hitchcock and Truffaut, because they're both great cinematographers,
right?
And it feels, I really enjoyed it. And if you love film, you will enjoy this. But it's not especially, you have some nice shots from the films. You don't need to go to the cinema. And it feels as though the interviews themselves and the books just bookend this documentary. And the middle section is a lot of directors just talking, what was it? Vox Pops, really, of the directors. Yeah. It's not anything, there's no film footage of them having his interviews.
Right. There's
some old footage of Hitchcock, you know, because he never wanted to be a director. Sort of, he worked his way up through the system. Well,
it sounds like a sort of Sky Arts feature-length documentary.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a good documentary that is great for film lovers. And it's wonderful seeing some Hitchcock's techniques, how he makes really small things the centre of the scenes, how he directs your eye onto... he creates mystery, like just, you know, a woman walking down the street and he's focusing on the handbag and moving back, so you know there's something in that handbag.
Yeah.
And he does it so perfectly, and it seems so simple. And these shots have been copied by all these directors and things that he was doing that changed film.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't get the credit for them because they become, you know, they become the trappings and tools of great directors now. So it's fascinating seeing how we took Hitchcock for granted. He's a brilliant man. He's great. He's really charismatic, interesting to listen to. I found it really interesting, but I could have just watched this at home and not gone to the cinema.
All right.
I give it 6 Marics. So for film lovers, you'll find it interesting, but is it a going to cinema piece? No.
Yeah, it's reminding me from your description of Jodorowsky's Dune, of just one of those documentaries, mostly vox pops, about an incredibly influential person in the world of cinema. And you go, if you're into it, it'll be really interesting. You do not need to see it in the cinema.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's Hitchcock, Truffaut, and The Witch, if you would like to see either of those. If you have seen them or see them in the future, then why not get in touch and tell us what you thought? DearFilmFandango@gmail.com is the email address. And we do all of this for free, so if you've enjoyed the show and would like to help us continue doing it, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there. Any and all donations are welcome, and everyone who has donated, you are the best.
Hey, guess what?
What's that?
You know, last week I was talking about my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Telling people to click on the advert.
That's right, yeah.
On that day,
yeah,
I made a record £1.50.
But I released the podcast a day late last week.
Oh, so it was a Saturday then. Yeah. It was a Saturday.
Yeah.
I made... It was a Saturday, was it?
Yeah,
it was the day after.
Yeah, it was the day after. £1.50?
Yeah.
Wow, there you go. I presume... The system works.
Thank you to our listeners for clicking on the advert.
Mary, you said you made 1p for each one. Are you suggesting 150 of our listeners followed your advice?
I think I might have made more.
Wow.
It might have been 3p or 4p per...
Well, if you would like to slowly but surely give Merrick maybe £5 in total, then keep going to Big Potato Productions and clicking on the advert links. We can...
I just wanted to say thank you, that was all.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. We'll be back next week.
I hope so.
Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are...
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.